Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate 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 Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya. Prayeshu abhadreshu Nittam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke
Bhagavati Uttama Shloke
Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki
Bhakti Bhavati.
Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, Chapter 7, Scheduled Incarnations, Text 10. Nabher Asav Rishabha Asa Sudevi Sunur Yo Vai Chachara Samadri Jara Prashanta Karanaha Parimukta Sangaha Nabhe Rasa Rishava Asa Sudevi Sunu Yovai Chachara Samadrik Jarajoga Charjam Yat parama hamsam rishaya padamamananti Sastha prashanta karana parimukta sangha Nabhe rasava rishava asha sudevi sunu Yovai chachara samadrik jara yoga charyam Yat parama hamsam rishaya padamamananti Sastha prashanta karana parimukta sangha Rasa Vrishava Asa Sudevi Sunu
Nabhe Rasa Vrishava Asa Sudevi
Yo Vai Chachara Samadrik Jara Yoga Charyam
Yo Vai Chachara Samadrik
Jara Yat Parama Hamsam Rishaya Padamananti
Yat Parama
Prashanta Karana Parimukta Sangha Nabhe by Maharaj Nabhi. Aso, the personality of Godhead. Rishabha,
Rishabha.
Asa,
Asa,
became.
Sudevi,
Sudevi, Sunuhu, the son of, Yaha,
who,
Vai,
certainly,
Chachara,
perform,
Samadrik,
equivalence,
Jara,
material,
Yoga Charjam,
performance of Yoga,
Yat,
which,
Paramahamsam,
the highest stage of perfection,
Rishayaha,
the learned sages,
Padam,
situation,
Amananti,
do accept,
Swastaha,
self-repose,
Prashanta,
suspended,
Karanaha,
the material senses,
Parimukta,
perfectly liberated,
Sangaha,
material contamination.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
The Lord appeared as the son of Sudevi, the wife of King Nabhi, and was known as Rishabhadev. He performed materialistic yoga to equivalence the mind. This stage is also accepted as the highest perfectional situation of liberation, wherein one is situated in oneself and is completely satisfied. Please repeat after me. The Lord appeared as the son of Sudevi.
The Lord appeared as the son of Sudevi.
The wife of King Nabhi.
The wife of King Nabhi.
And was known as Rishabhadev.
And was known as Rishabhadev.
He performed materialistic yoga.
He performed materialistic yoga.
To equivalence the mind.
To equalize the mind.
This stage is also accepted.
This stage is also accepted.
As the highest perfectional situation of liberation.
Of liberation.
Wherein one is situated.
In oneself.
And is completely satisfied. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Out of many types of mystic performances of self-realization, the process of Yara Yoga is also one accepted by authorities. This Yara Yoga involves practicing, becoming like a dumb stone and not being affected by material reaction. Just as a stone is indifferent to all kinds of attacks and re-attacks of external situations, similarly one practices Yara Yoga by tolerating voluntary infliction of pain upon the material body. Such yogis, out of many self-infliction methods, practice plucking out the hairs on their heads without shaving and without any instrumental help. But the real purpose of such Yara Yoga practice is to get free from all material affection and to be completely situated in the self. At the last stage of his life, Emperor Rishabhadev wandered like a dumb madman, unaffected by all kinds of bodily mistreatments. Seeing him like a madman, wandering naked with long hair and long beard, less intelligent children and men in the street used to spit on him and urinate on his body. He used to lie in his own stool and never move. But the stool of his body was fragrant like the smell of fragrant flowers. And a saintly person would recognize him as a Paramahamsa, one in the highest stage of human perfection. One who is not able to make his stool fragrant should not, however, imitate Emperor Rishabhadev. The practice of Yara Yoga was possible for Rishabhadev and others on the same level of perfection. But such an uncommon practice is impossible for an ordinary man. The real purpose of Yara Yoga, as mentioned here in this verse, is Prashanta Karana, or subduing the senses. The whole process of yoga, under whatever headings it may be, is to control the unbridled material senses and thus prepare oneself for self-realization. In this age specifically, this Jara Yoga cannot be of any practical value. But on the other hand, the practice of Bhakti Yoga is feasible because it is just suitable for this age. The simple method of hearing from the right source, Srimad Bhagavatam, will lead one to the highest perfectional stage of yoga. Rishabdev was the son of King Nabhi and the grandson of King Agnetra, and he was the father of King Bharat, after whose name this planet was called Bharatvarsha. Rishabdev's mother also was known as Meru Devi, although her name is mentioned here as Sudevi. It is sometimes proposed that Sudevi was another wife of King Nabhi, but since King Rishabdev is mentioned elsewhere as the son of Meru Devi, it is clear that Meru Devi and Sudevi are the same person under different names. Nabhe Rashava Rishava Asa Sudevi Sunuri Jo Vai Chachara Samadrig Jara Yoga Charyam Jat Paramahamsam Rishaya Padamamananti Swastham Prashanta Karana Parimukta Sangha. The Lord appeared as the son of Sudevi, the wife of King Nabhi, and was known as Rishabdev. He performed materialistic yoga to equibalance the mind. This stage is also accepted as the highest perfectional situation of liberation, wherein one is situated in oneself and is completely satisfied. So, this chapter, the seventh chapter of the second canto, is describing the scheduled incarnations, how the Supreme Personality of Godhead incarnated at different point in time in this material nature, specifically on this planet. This is the ninth description of incarnations of the Lord. The total 23 descriptions of 23 incarnations of the Lord in this chapter. Now Rishabdev is being described here. It has been described that Rishabdev was the son of King Nabhi and Sudevi. In the fifth canto, there has been an elaborate description of Rishabdev's appearance and activities. It has been described that King Nabhi, who was the illustrious son of a very wonderful personality, King Agnetra, performed great sacrifices along with his wife, Meru Devi. In the fifth canto, Rishabdev's mother has been described as Meru Devi, whereas here, in this verse, she has been described as Sudevi. But in the purport, Prabhupada pointed out that Meru Devi and Sudevi is actually the same personality. Sometimes, people in the Vedic culture are addressed by similar names, signifying similar meanings. So, along with his wife, King Nabhi performed great sacrifices. And as a result of that, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared to them. Being pleased with them, the Lord manifested himself in front of them. And when he asked what they actually wanted from him, they requested that they wanted to have him as their son. And the Lord granted that benediction to them, that yes, I will appear to you as your son. And as a result of that, the Lord appeared as King Rishabhadev. Rishabhadev is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he performed his activities in the most illustrious way. Although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it has been described that his body was Satchidananda. Rishabhadev's body was not material. Rishabhadev's body was spiritual body, made of eternity, knowledge and bliss. But still he acted just like an ordinary person. He was a king, so he ruled his kingdom. But he ruled his kingdom in an illustrious way, just propagating Krishna consciousness all over his kingdom and encouraging and inspiring all his citizens to become devotees of the Lord. That is the responsibility of a king and a leader. An ideal leader must teach his followers how to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How to become surrendered at the lotus feet of the Lord, because that is the perfection of human existence. To become a devotee of the Lord is the ultimate goal of life. So when one becomes a devotee of the Lord, he achieves the ultimate perfection. And that's why a leader must lead his followers to that destination, to become the devotees of the Supreme Personality of God. So Rishabhadev did that. And also another thing Rishabhadev did was to establish an example for Varnashram. The four ashrams are Brahmachari life, Grihastha life, Vanaprastha life and Sannyas life. Now Rishabhadev, although he was a king, at some point in time Rishabhadev decided to leave his kingdom and accept the renounced order of life. And so Rishabhadev, he called his sons. He had 100 sons, and out of them the eldest was King Bharat, Maharaj Bharat. And other 9 very exemplary and illustrious sons of Rishabhadev are the Navajogendras, the 9 Yogendras, the greatest of the yogis. So he called his sons and he gave them the instructions, spiritual instructions, how to lead their lives. And after giving those instructions, that what is the purpose of human life and how one must act in order to perfect his existence, Rishabhadev left home. And when Rishabhadev took that aspect of his life, the purpose of renunciation is to become totally unaffected by the urges of the senses. Especially in Vanaprastha, the purpose of Vanaprastha is to nullify all the attachment one develops during household life. The Vedic way of life was very scientific. The first phase of the life, the first quarter, is meant for self-restraint, brahmacharya life, student life. As a student, one must learn to control his senses, must become disciplined. Because if a student is not disciplined, he will not be able to learn anything. A person with uncontrolled senses cannot possibly acquire knowledge, especially spiritual knowledge. So Rishabhdev, following the Vedic Varnashram system, although the son of a king, went through this. Like every civilized human being in the Vedic culture used to do that. First phase of life is brahmachari life. Then grihastha life, householder life. He enters into household life. And in the household life, first of all, in brahmachari life, one learns how to control his senses. But in household life, there is certain amount of indulgence to sense gratification has been allowed. And then when one passes through the household life, then he comes, then he accepts the brahmachari, the vanaprastha life. And the purpose of vanaprastha life is to free oneself from the attachments that developed during the household life. Materialistic attachments are very deep and very effective. Materialistic attachments to sense gratification forms a very deep-rooted habits. So the purpose of vanaprastha life is to free oneself from those habits. So at that stage, when one takes to vanaprastha order of life, one actually denies himself from all possibilities of sense enjoyment. In order to do that, one has to be very, very strong. The senses will have their urges. But at that stage of vanaprastha, one will very effectively disregard those urges and deny the senses of the sense gratification that they are craving. So that at that stage, one behaves like an inert object, totally disregarding the urges of the senses. And this has been described here as a yara yoga, becoming yara, inert, dumb, not at all affected by the onslaughts of the material nature. Like generally, we try to protect the body from the undesirable onslaughts of material nature. Generally, when it is very cold, we try to keep the body, or for the sake of the body, we try to create a warm and comfortable situation. When it becomes very hot, it is a tendency to be in a cool situation. When one is hungry, one tends to eat. When one is thirsty, one tends to drink. In this way, generally, one acts according to the urges of the body. But at that stage of Jara Yoga, one totally denies that. Like if it is hot, one just places himself in that situation and does not want to change the situation where the body will be a little more comfortable. And when it is cold, he doesn't make any effort to keep himself warm. When one is hungry, he doesn't indulge in eating food, and so forth. So this is how Rishabhdev, through his own example, established the way of becoming detached from material sense enjoyment or urges of the senses. Then it has been pointed out that Rishabhdev used to wander around totally unconcerned about his body. Like at that stage, Rishabhdev was totally unconcerned about not only the need of his body, but even the existence of his body. That stage is called Avadhuta stage, or this stage is also called Paramahamsa stage. When one is perfectly situated in his spiritual identity, and he doesn't have any attachment or any link, any connection, any concern for his material body. He was so unconcerned about his body that he didn't even care to shave his head or trim his hair. He was so unconcerned that he did not even care to shave his beard. Like, he let his hair grow, he let his beard grow. And he was so unconcerned about the body that he did not even wear clothes. He was totally unconcerned about the body and the body's needs. So that is why this stage is called Paramahamsa stage. At that stage, one is completely transcendental to his physical identity, and he is perfectly situated in his spiritual identity. Being situated in his spiritual identity, he is completely oblivious of his material body. But his material body functioned in such a wonderful way also. It has been described that when Rishabhdev used to evacuate, the fragrance, generally ordinary human living entity stools are putrid, vile smelling. But his waste product of his body was fragrant, so much so that it used to spread over miles. So that is the wonderful aspect of a perfected living entity's activities. Although Rishabhdev used to behave apparently like a madman, totally unconcerned about his body. Like when people generally see a person walking without clothes, with long hair, and without even caring for his body, taking bath, and people think that that's a madman. Rather, the madman behaved like that. But the Rishabhdev's activity was like that of a madman. But was he a madman? No. He was completely opposite to what a madman is. In that respect, it can be considered that the opposite extremes often appear to be alike. Just like the sunset and sunrise appears to be alike, but they are diametrically opposed. Similarly, Rishabhdev's activities were apparently like that of a madman. But was Rishabhdev a madman? No. He was a self-realized soul. He was transcendental to the material nature and perfectly situated in his spiritual identity. Or what to speak of, he is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality. So, in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appearing in this planet, sometimes as a human being, instructs the other human beings how to act. So Rishabhdev taught the living entities how to act. Even though he was a king, he gave up his kingdom. And while he was leaving his home, leaving his kingdom, leaving his palace, he instructed his sons in the most wonderful way. Those instructions have been recorded in the fifth canto. Wonderful examples, wonderful instructions to the children by a father who is about to leave his home. And then the way Rishabhdev acted, totally unconcerned about his material existence. And although apparently Rishabhdev appeared to be like a madman, but the wonderful thing is that thousands of people used to follow Rishabhdev. Some people may have been unaware of Rishabhdev's exalted position, but many people did recognize his exalted position. And they used to follow him. Wherever Rishabhdev used to go, thousands of people used to just follow him. And that's why when King Arhat, the king of the province called Konka and Benka, saw Rishabhdev, so famous, so many people following him, so he began to wonder that I am a king, not so many people are so attracted to me. Now if I start to behave like this person, then I will become famous. So King Arhat started to imitate Rishabhdev's activities. But that actually was an unbona fide and inappropriate imitation. He was imitating Rishabhdev's external activities without understanding the profundity of Rishabhdev's self-realization, God-realization. And that created a disturbance in the society. Anyway, that is another thing, so we don't want to get into that. But the point is that Rishabhdev, the way he acted, was a perfect example for a living entity to follow. But then Prabhupada pointed out that in this age, it is not possible for living entities to act the way Rishabhdev acted. We can see that in this age, that vanaprastha way of life is practically impossible. In this age, who can leave home? What to speak of his kingdom? Even an ordinary person who has nothing, a person whose children don't even want him to stay at home, they wonder when this old man is going to leave home or going to die. This is the condition of the age of Kali. The children think about their parents as a burden and consider, oh, it will be such a relief if he left home and went to some ashram to live. Or better still would be, just if he didn't go to an ashram, then better let him die. So we'll be free from this burden, undesirable burden. So even though they are not wanted by their own children and grandchildren, still they want to hold on to their household situation. I remember a long time back, once in Calcutta, one of our devotees was preaching to an old man. He used to come with his family to the temple, and he was preaching to him that, why you are old? He was quite a well-to-do person, quite a well-to-do business family, and the business was established by him and his children. He handed it over to them. So he was telling him that, why don't you go to Mayapur and retire there? And this point was not sinking deep into that man. So he was giving various excuses why he could not leave. And then at one point he told him, this devotee who was preaching to him, I was just sitting there watching him preach. And at one point he just told him that, look, you are so attached to your family, but the reality is that your family don't want you. Your family doesn't want you. Your children, you think that they're so dear to you, but actually they don't want you at home. They'll be relieved if you leave home and go somewhere else. And I noticed at that time that old man looked at his son and his daughter-in-law with an expectation that they would say that, no, 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 we want him to stay. But they were silent. And it was such a pathetic sight, actually. At that time, you know, that man, you could see that his heart really sank with pain. That he realized that his children don't want him at home. But still he would not leave. And you know, eventually what happened? He stopped coming to the temple. Because the sadhus speak such straightforward, cutting words that it causes pain in the heart. Anyway, so this is the state of affairs in the age of Kali. In one hand, people want to hold on to their household situation till the end of their lives. And there is no question of aspiring for spiritual perfection or spiritual elevation. Therefore, in this age, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has given us the most convenient process, the easiest of all processes for spiritual development, chanting the holy name of the Lord. In this age, one won't be able to properly practice the Vanaprastha way of life or sannyas order of life. Therefore, best is just chant the holy name in wherever you are situated. But it is wonderful to come across this illustrious examples as has been set by personalities like King Rishabhdev and as an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not only Rishabhdev, his son also set a similar example. Maharaj Bharat, at his young age, he left his kingdom and went to the forest. Who, due to his attachment to a deer in his next life, got a deer body. But then he was a liberated pure devotee as Jara Bharat. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Gaur Premanande, Hare Hare. Does anybody have any question? Yes, Sitaram.
This vast display by the Lord of His various incarnations in various pastimes, what would be the kernel and main understanding behind what was generally in so huge and has so many? We only know a few. People who start minimizing, as you know, beyond their conception.
Yeah. The kernel instruction is that if you want to solve all the problems of your life, just surrender unto Him. Because He is the supreme shelter. Through all His incarnations, He is actually teaching that. You surrender unto Me, all your responsibilities will be taken care of by Me. If you don't surrender unto Me, you're on your own. And if you go against Me, I will take care of you. Right? In another way. So that is the ultimate consideration. Like, At the end of Bhagavad Gita, what Krishna suggested? Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam. Just surrender. So that is the kernel instruction. And aham tvam sarva papibhyo mukshayishami. Don't worry. Just surrender unto me. I will take care of you in all respects. Hare Krishna. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, in this purport of this verse, Srila Prabhupada is explaining how the king of Konkan Vaikha, actually he imitated the Shukadeva. And I just wanted to confirm regarding this sect of Jainism. Is it from that king or how bona fide it is and what else?
Yeah, Jainism actually started with King Arhat. Actually, they pronounce his name as Arihant. But Bhagavatam describes him as King Arhat, which also means Arihant, you can say. Ari means enemy, and Hant means a destroyer. The one who destroys his enemy or kills his enemy. And they also identify that their sect, Jainism, actually started from King Rishabdev. They recognize that he is the original propounder of that cult. But the actual one was the one who imitated King Rishabdev was King Arhat, who was the king of the province of Konka and Benka. And then came Mahavir, who actually gave it the main thrust. The practice was going on since a long time, but the main thrust actually came in the age of Kali, through Mahavir. Now, Buddha came, and he actually affected the Kshatriyas. It's mainly the Kshatriyas who followed Lord Buddha, but the Vaishyas followed Mahavir. Yeah, so that actually originated from King Rishabdev. I mean, in a way, you can say. Yes. Well, the only system that is practicing vanaprastha are the ISKCON devotees. Isn't it? Like, apart from ISKCON, there's hardly any vanaprastha culture going on. And in ISKCON, the system is very simple. Stay in the ashram and get rid of whatever attachment there may be. And the ultimate consideration is to chant the holy name of the Lord. And that process is applicable to all, whether irrespective of one's ashram situation and varna situation. So that is the varna, that is the system for, or that's the prescription for the vanaprastha of this age. Just like move out of your family situation, be in the ashram and chant the holy name, render devotional service. Right, that's it. And also that brings another consideration at the back of my mind, is that the society also have to become prepared to provide the facilities for those vanaprastha devotees. Like it is essential, it will gradually become more and more essential. Because now the way things are, because of various reasons, the society is trying to shy away from these sort of responsibilities. They're mainly because they're so burdened about by this responsibility of maintaining whatever is there. They cannot extend themselves to take any more on their plate. But the reality is that the society have to equip, our society have to equip us itself with these needs, or to fulfill those needs and requirements. And I'm confident that that will happen. At least the need is there, now the facilitation has to be provided. Hare Krishna, Gaur Premanand, okay. Take the mic.
And we know there are 8 topics of Bhagavatam. Each canto is divided into each specific topic. So in the second canto, you see secondary creation of Lord Buddha. But if you see the first canto, there is no creation aspect as such. So how do we understand that?
Yeah, the thing is, although Puran has this 10 aspects. Sarga, Visarga, Uti, Poshana, Avatara, Mannanta, Katha, etc. But doesn't have to be right from the beginning, like Bhagavad. Towards the first canto, it is setting the scene. It's setting the scene, actually. Right? It's kind of, you can say, it's like the prelude. But after the prelude or preamble, then the topic begins.
But if we see Prabhupada's Bhagavatam, each canto is kind of labeled that way. Sometimes my canto is Vedika, Veda, Sinhala, Varayasana, Swami, Ketan, Swami, Maharaj. And you are mentioning that actually if we study from the Acharyas, the Sandhavas, and they say that it is all mixed up, it is actually not very specific.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. Like, that's what I meant. Like, it's not, we can't expect that right from the beginning, it would start with Sarga and then Visarga and so forth. It is kind of, the first canto is more like a preamble leading to the topic. But then it's coming to the creation and sub-creation and proceeding in that way. And it is not, it's not sequential, but juxtaposed at times. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Gaur Premanande, Hare Krishna.